Welcome back. You're listening Across the Border. This is our Bible study edition, and we're going through the Gospel of John, and we ended up in chapter 1 about verse 46. We have a lot of young men here that are, I guess, perhaps young compared to my age, that were actively interested in who the Messiah was. As a matter of fact, it appears that they were looking for him, that they were interested in prophecy, that they apparently knew that the Messiah was going to show up on the scene. We understand from reading the Gospels and the epistles in the New Testament that there were other people, and if you understand the history, that there were a lot of false messiahs that were showing up because of the prophecies and this being about the time that the prophecy said that the Messiah would show up, and that would be the 69th week of the 70 weeks prophecy was coming to its end. So they were actively seeking him, as we would be if we were living in that time. I know I would be, given the mentality that I have right now and how interested I am in prophecy. We would be seeking him, and they were seeking him. And we left off here in verse 45, Philip findeth Nathanael, and he says to him, we have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said to him, Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Philip saith unto him, come and see. You got to come and see this guy. This is different than those other guys. You know, 'cause they probably went to see some of these other guys that claimed to be the Messiah. You know, the ones that they spoke of and nothing came of it. Okay, so he says to Philip, says to Nathanael, come and see. And Jesus saw Nathanael coming. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and says to him, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. And Nathanael says to him, whence knowest thou me? How do you know me? Because he's speaking to him as if he knows him, right? Perhaps Nathanael is a little bit skeptical here. I think perhaps, you know, he saw some of these other guys that claim to be the Messiah, and so he's pretty skeptical. How do you know me? And Jesus says, answered and said to him, before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Whoa, you know, I don't know what was going on under the fig tree, but somehow this verified something happened under that fig tree. You know, perhaps I could speculate that Philip was praying there, or he was speaking to God, reveal to me the Messiah or something. I don't know. But when Jesus said this to Philip, we can only imagine the circumstance, what happened. But somehow, Nathanael answers and says to him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God. Thou art the King of Israel. Wow. Now, somehow, Jesus verified just by saying those few words. Before Philip called thee, when you were under the fig tree, I saw thee. That's how I knew you. Was he speaking to God? Was he praying? We don't know. We don't get those details. We can only imagine that if this has happened to us, how that, you know, Jesus verified who he was by that simple statement to Nathanael. And Nathanael answered and said to him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God. Thou art the King of Israel. And Jesus answered and said to him, because I said to thee, I saw you under the fig tree, believest thou? Thou shalt see greater things than these. So see, this was an unusual thing for him to say this, to verify who he was. And now he's telling him, you're going to see greater things than these. So he said to him, verily, verily, I say unto you, unto hereafter you shall see heaven open up, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. John chapter 2 and verse 1. And the third day, there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. So now we're chronicling the days. Now I have to add that John was an eyewitness to this account. He was an eyewitness to these things that happened, and so he is writing an eyewitness account. This is not a hearsay account like the gospel according to Luke. John is giving a first-hand account of these things. He said to the third day, and the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee. Now, you know, perhaps Jesus told him some things. I don't know exactly what he saw with his eyes firsthand. But he was there. He was an apostle of Jesus. So either these things were transmitted, or he saw them, or the Spirit revealed them to him. Where we do have the account of Luke. And we've discussed this before. And Luke goes out and he describes what his account is in the opening of the gospel according to Luke. How he set out. And he searched these things out to build his account. So he investigated. And of course he investigated according to the Spirit of Truth. So he had something that a lot of other, let's say, worldly investigators wouldn't have. They wouldn't have that Spirit of Truth. And I just wanted to clarify that John was an eyewitness. He was an apostle of Jesus. He was there for most of these things, if not all of these things that he's writing about. So it was the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." Okay, so basically, they wanted wine means they ran out of wine, if we read this correctly. So they were in want of wine. They ran out of wine. And the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus says to her, "Woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come." So he understands what she wants, but he says, "My hour has not yet come." Well, if perhaps the hour just arrived, I think about this and, you know, chuckle a little bit because he says, "My hour has not yet come." But guess what? It was there now, okay? And his mother says to the servants, "Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it." And there were set 6 pots of water of stone, after the manner of purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. I don't know what a firkin is. Doesn't matter. I don't know how big these pots were. But anyway, they were containing... and he says, they were empty pots. And Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he says to them, "Draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast." And they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, he knew not whence it was. But the servants which drew the water knew. And the governor of the feast called the bridegroom. And Jesus said unto him, "Every man at the beginning does set forth the good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse, but thou hast kept the good wine until now." So we have an understanding here that when it says that they were in want of wine, they had none, that means they ran out because they already drunk the wine they had, and perhaps all they could afford was poor wine. So we know that if the Master, Jesus, is going to turn water into wine, that it's going to be the best wine. Now, I've drank wine, and I've tasted cheap wine in my life, and I've tasted good wine, and there's varying degrees in between. And now, if you drink a whole bunch of cheap wine, and they bring out good wine, you could hardly tell the difference. But if you start a feast with good wine, and everybody drinks it up because it's very expensive, then you bring out the cheap wine. And that's what the master of the ceremonies here was commenting on at the feast here, this marriage celebration. And so he comments on this. And here's another thing is, a lot of people think that it's a sin to drink. And, you know, perhaps it is. It can be. It could be a sin to do things that are lawful, if they're done at the wrong time, or if they're done, to excess. Okay? So what we have here is we have a circumstance. We have not a rule. You don't drink as a rule in your life. You have a special occasion. And now who is here at this special occasion? It's family. And it's extended family. And it's a whole lot of people having a celebration. So they drink a little wine. They feel good. But you're with your family. And your family's looking out for you. So this means, yes, you can drink, but you cannot drink to excess. You can drink on special occasions. You can drink for medicinal purposes, not because you need to escape reality. That's not one of the medicinal purposes. There have been times in my life, and it's been a long time, but where I was out of work and I had nothing to do, and I had a little insomnia problem. So I would have a glass of wine, just a glass of wine, before I went to bed, just a little wine before I went to bed. And that way I could lay down and I could sleep because it was a medicinal thing. It was better than taking insomniac pharmaceuticals, okay, for me. And it worked and I never had a drinking problem. If you have a drinking problem, Jesus, like he said, you cut it off. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. If drink causes you to sin, well, you cut it off, get it out of your house, stay away from the bars. That you can drink, that all things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. Just because you can drink wine because it's lawful doesn't mean that you should, or that you should do it all the time. It doesn't give you a license to go to a bar or hang out with wine bibbers, okay? As the Bible calls them, wine bibbers, drunkards. And also, the other thing about drinking is if you're going to have a occasion where, the family is together and the family looks out for each other and someone drinks a little too much, that the family is going to take care of them. But you have to, your family has to take care of you. You're not going to be in a situation where you're in the world and hanging out with drunkards or hanging out at a bar where you're going to be picked up and taken advantage of, because when you drink, you become you don't have full discretion. You're not able to make decisions that are good. You might be taken advantage of, okay? We see that, go back to the Old Testament where they had a feast and they had whose family was it? Abraham and Isaac's family? Jacob's family. Who was it? I think it was Isaac's family. They went and, they went to a celebration in the town and someone took advantage of one of the daughters. And then, they went and the brothers got together and they murdered all the men in that town afterwards. So we see where that led. So that you have to be on the lookout for your family, and you have to, you can't do drugs and get drunk and go to places where sinners hang out, because they are there to take advantage of you, because to fulfill the lusts of their flesh. So there may be an occasion like when you go to a wedding or you're having, or even the feasts or the Feast of Tabernacles, say, if you're celebrating that. But you're there with your family, you're there with people that are looking out for you, because a lot of us don't drink, and that's a good thing that few drink. But alcohol, it should be outlawed, nobody should do it, or it's sinful in itself. Well, simply is not true here. Otherwise, Jesus would be sinning by making wine. And he was talking about real wine, not grape juice, okay? And when he shared the cup at the Passover, believe me, it was the fruit of the vine. It wasn't grape juice. It was real wine. So I had to comment on that, because and then there's a lot of people, like I said, they will take advantage of this and say, see, I can drink. Okay, yeah, you can drink. But what are the circumstances of your drinking? What is the purpose of it? And where are you doing it? Do they fit in these biblical guidelines? Okay, or is it an occasion for the flesh? So those are the questions you have to ask yourself. You have liberty, but are you using your liberty as an occasion for the flesh? So we have the governor of the feast. He called to the bridegroom, and he says, and he makes these comments about how good the good wine was saved for the last. Let's continue here with our word. John chapter 2, verse 11. This beginning of miracles. So, see, the hour had just arrived. He said, my hour's not yet. But there it was. It was upon him. So this beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee was manifested forth, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. So there was a purpose for these miracles. They were to authenticate that, yes, this was the Messiah, that supernatural things can happen. Water turned into wine. So it was the hour, because he had his disciples there, and they were there to witness to these things, and then in turn, witness to the world. After this, he went down to Capernaum. He and his mother and his brethren and his disciples, and they continued there not many days. They weren't there very long in contemporary language. And the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So this was, well, what Passover would this be? This would be like three Passovers before the Passover where he became the Passover. So this was a Passover. The Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And they found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the changers of money sitting. And when he had made a scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money, and overthrew the tables, and said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence, make not my Father's house a house of merchandise. And his disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. So what does this tell you about his disciples? So a little more clue as to who these disciples were. They weren't just dummies that he was picking up, but they were studying his word. They knew it. So these were lay people like us. You know, they weren't part of the clergy of the temple, several sects of the temple, whose life was, you know, whose life and perhaps vocation was the temple and the priesthood and those things that pertain to that. But these were guys that were growing up in regular families that had jobs like fishing or whatever they did. But they were also studying and into the Word of God. So they remembered, and his disciples remembered, that it was written. That means, how did they remember? Because they do it, they studied it, they were familiar with the Word of God. Either that, or they paid a lot of attention when the scrolls were being read in the temple, okay, and remembered those things. Perhaps much sharper than our public schooled, common person today. Okay, then answered the Jews and said unto him, what sign showest thou us, seeing that thou doest these things? So they want a sign. And Jesus answered and said to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Yeah, Jesus is kind of giving them a riddle, and they don't understand it. They want to apply it directly to not the temple of his body. And he was, you know, if you could watch him, you know, he was probably pointing at his body when he said those words. I would imagine. He wasn't pointing at the temple. He wasn't there to confuse them. But even though he pointed at his body, they still did not understand. Because they did not understand that their bodies were a temple. A temple suitable for the Almighty and his spirit to live in. So Jesus says, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then said the Jews, 46 years was this temple in building, and thou wilt rear it up in 3 days? When therefore he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this unto them, and they believed the scriptures, and the word which Jesus had said. Now when he was in Jerusalem, at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. So they didn't believe by his word merely, but it was the miracles that caused people to follow him. And I see today that there's a lot of people that claim to do miracles. I can't say I've ever really seen a miracle myself. You know, I haven't seen anybody go from blind to seeing. I know things like that have happened through just medical procedures and so forth, but is that really a miracle? I've seen people pretend to lengthen legs, and, you know, perhaps these some miracles have happened, and I do believe that miracles have happened, but I don't know that I've ever seen one. But they saw miracles, things that they couldn't explain. And it's like when he told Nathaniel, because I said, I saw you under the fig tree, you believe. He says, much greater things are you going to see. And so they began to see, with the water being turned to wine and other miracles, which he was doing in Jerusalem, that made people believe. He got their attention by making the scourge and driving the money changers from the temple and saying the things that he said and preaching the gospel of the kingdom. But when the miracles happened, people paid attention and they told other people. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, it says, because he knew all men, and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. The Gospel of John, chapter 3 and verse 1. There was a man of the Pharisees, named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. And I think we're going to go into a break here any second. Ah, yes, I have the clock. Has the wrong time on it. What the clock I'm looking at. I got to stop looking at that clock with the wrong time. But anyway, we'll start in John chapter 3 when we get back from the break. In the meantime, like I said, visit my website, crosstheborder.org. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And when you subscribe to my blog, make sure you send me a message if you're interested in a free copy of my book. That would be PDF or EPUB version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. And you can purchase a hard copy there, and that would help support us. Or you can even purchase the e-copy there, and that would help support us. Okay, we'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.